Hello, everyone, and welcome to End of Life University Podcast, where we share real talk about life and death. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Wyatt, and today I'll be sharing with you an interview with Linda Goldman. Linda is a grief therapist who works primarily with children. She does work with adults and people of all ages, but she has a focus on children and grief. So we're going to be talking about trauma, grief, and resilience for children in 2020, because right now is a time when certainly as a society, we're experiencing a great deal of grief and trauma on a daily basis. And it's important that we focus in on children and talk about some things we can do to help children deal with the times that we're in. But I did want to mention that all of these tips and resources that Linda shares in our interview can actually help any of us, because ultimately we're all children at heart. And so I think even if you don't have children or grandchildren, this is still a great interview for you to listen to and pick up on some tips that might help you on your own journey through these challenging times. So I'll get right into the interview right now. Just stay tuned afterwards. I'll share some of my takeaway points and also a few announcements at the very end. So here we go. Today, I'm very happy to welcome my guest, Linda Goldman. Linda is a grief therapist, counselor, and teacher who shares workshops, courses, and trainings on children's grief and trauma and on working with LGBT youth. She has lectured at many universities around the U.S. and in Taiwan and Hong Kong. Because of her expertise on the subject of children and grief, Linda has been interviewed numerous times in the U.S. media and has worked as a consultant and panelist for a wide variety of programs and events, which you can read about in her more extensive bio on her website. Linda is the author of numerous articles about children and grief and has written several books, including Life and Loss, A Guide to Help Grieving Children, and Breaking the Silence, A Guide to Help Children with Complicated Grief. You can learn more at her website, which is grievingchildren.net. Linda, thank you so much for joining me today.
And thank you for having me. I'm really looking forward to this conversation.
Well, it's such an important conversation to have.
It really, really is. It's actually one of the most important, because the whole conversation on young people and grief and loss is so broad and so deep and covers so many issues. And we were kind of thinking about how do we even begin a dialogue on all of the grief and loss issues that our kids are experiencing right now in the present. And one of them is that normal as the way that it was before the pandemic, before the riots, has turned into a different normal for these kids. Karen, I don't know if you want me to address just the grief itself in the world today, but I think when we thought about what can we tell parents, what kind of tips can we give them, and I know we will be talking about that, underneath it all is this idea that we're all progressing through a time we don't understand, and so are our kids, so that all of the grief and loss issues that they came into these events with, whether it be death, abuse, poverty, et cetera, are still with them with the overlay of what they're experiencing now. And that it's really not a quick fix. It's a progressive understanding of your child and understanding the nature of grief. And that's what I hope we touch on today.
Yes. And as we were saying, it's so important that we do address this issue, because I think how our children navigate the grief they're experiencing right now is going to shape them for many years to come throughout their lives.
That is very, very true. I am a grief therapist for children, adolescents, and adults. And so often I find that adults come into grief therapy on one issue, but there's an underlying issue of grief that they haven't worked through. I have had adults and children come in about the death of a pet, only to discover it reminded them of the death of their grandmother that they never really grieved. And I don't know if you'd like me to give you a few examples of how this works when kids aren't allowed to grieve. But I had one little girl, Ashley, and her mom died when she was five. She barely saw her dad. She was taken away from her home, her school, her community, her friends, in 2 weeks, and brought to live with an aunt and uncle that she barely knew. She was very withdrawn, and she really didn't share her feelings. One day she came in and she said, "Linda, I had this terrible nightmare. My mommy was dying," and she started crying. And I said, "Well, tell me about it." And as the nightmare unfolded, she said, "I know it's my fault that my mom died." She picked me up on the, I said, "Well, why was it your fault?" She said, "Well, she picked me up on the night that she died, and then she had a heart attack. I know it's my fault." Mm. Only we could release this in time could we begin to work with her magical thinking, as so many kids have, that they're the cause of their the death of their person. And sometimes people carry this cause where they're at fault or God is at fault, and they carry this into adulthood. So I think it's really important to help kids release their grief and loss feelings while they are children, so they don't need to carry them with them through their life, as many of us as adults have.
And Linda, maybe you could touch on this for a moment. Do children grieve a little bit differently than adults, or does it look different than the way adults are grieving as you see a child going through grief?
I think it's a great question. You know, every child is unique, and so is their grief. So the attitude that I've always had is, let the child tell me about their grief, and I can join them where they are. Children have different ways of grieving. Sometimes they're sad, sometimes they're happy. Sometimes they may appear not to feel anything at all. The one thing that absolutely helps kids that I found in therapy with children is that kids often work through their grief with play. And sometimes a frivolous play activity may actually be a very profound way that a child works through their grief. Tommy was 6 years old. He came to grief therapy and he came and said, "Linda, I'm very sad. My mommy died." And I handed him a toy telephone and I said, "Why don't you give her a call?" And he began to have that ongoing, ever-present conversation with his mom through play. "Hi, mommy, how are you? I really miss you. I wish I could see you. Let me tell you about my day." So I think that's an important thing to remember. One dad got angry at his son because he felt like his son wasn't grieving enough at mom's after mom's funeral, because when all the people came, the little boy wanted to go out and play. And we had to explain to dad that play often is a way that kids can work through their grief process. I think another thing that parents might feel about grieving children is that if they bring up the subject, it might upset them. And actually, it's very helpful. You know, kids have a way of saying how they feel, and then that's enough for them. But when, as Mr. Rogers said, which I've always loved, what's mentionable is manageable. And if we can talk to kids on their age-appropriate level, I think it's very helpful. The other piece about the difference between kids and adults is that kids are developing. And kids at the sensory motor stage of development, which is about 0 to 2, just see grief in a very simple way. Peekaboo and all gone and things like that. But they do feel a grief environment. Sometimes I stress to parents, one of the most important stages is the pre-operational stage. And it's probably from around 2 to 7. During this age, kids see death as reversible. They think that if they write their dad a letter who died, the mailman will bring a letter back. They often, as Ashley did in the little story I told you, feel like through their magical thinking and causality at that age, they feel like they may, in essence, have caused the death to happen. I worked with kids after 9/11, and one little guy came over to me, and we were talking, and, you know, we built a relationship. And he said to me, you know, it's my fault that my dad died in the Twin Towers. I said, well, why would it be your fault? He said, well, my dad didn't like his job, and I didn't make him quit. I should have given him my backpack so he could escape from the towers. And it's the way that kids think, and only when they can say it out loud can we begin to work with that and explain what really happened.
Mm. And Linda, I remember, I mean, this was when I was young, but it seemed to be a prevailing belief then that young children won't remember what happened. And so we don't need to tell them when someone dies. We don't need to talk about it or deal with their grief because they won't remember it when they grow up. And I assume no one thinks that way anymore, but it seems to me that that was a particularly harmful belief in the past.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes, Karen, that comes out of an adult's fear of they don't know what to say. They're afraid they'll upset the child. Why say anything? And that's why I've been such an advocate to find words to use to talk to kids at their developmental level, because kids are very savvy and they sense something is going on. They hear it. They see people crying and be upset. And so it's very important that we tell them the truth age appropriately. So I've found that when kids aren't told the truth, and often this happens with the decision to remain silent, that they begin to feel not only the loss of knowing the truth, but the loss of trusting the adult world around them. And I think it's not as scary as people think, because kids are usually very satisfied with a simple answer. And if they're not, they'll keep talking. But you can always say to them, too, if you have more questions, I'm here. If I don't know the answer, I'll help you to find out. One young child, whose dad died in Iraq, wanted to know exactly what happened when his dad died. And the question that a lot of kids ask, did he suffer? And we worked very hard to find out who was with Dad when he died. And it was very comforting to this little boy to know that Dad had a very close friend with him at the time.
Mm. It does seem to me that children, more than anything, want to feel safe wherever they are, and that having more information or understanding what's going on, or even being able to ask their questions, would help them feel safer than not knowing at all what's happening, not understanding why are these adults crying, why do they seem upset. So it seems like knowing at least something is definitely helpful.
It's very, very helpful. And also, I think it's important for parents to know that kids take things literally. And so we have to be very careful about how their little minds are processing what they hear and what they see, whether it's through their family or the media. And sometimes it's good to do a check to say, well, what do you think is happening? Because sometimes their ideas are distorted. For example, after 9/11, a lot of kids who just watched the news felt like every time they saw a replay of 9/11, it was happening over and over and over again.
Hmm.
And so we really can't be afraid to check it out. And the other thing that you mentioned was children's questions. I have found through the years that children's questions are a wonderful tool to work with them, because they're often a window to their inner feelings and what they're unconsciously thinking about. This is not an unconscious question, and this may be off the topic a little, but it made me think of it. I watched the Sesame Street town hall on racism, and one little boy had quite a question. He said, "When I grow up, I want to be a neurosurgeon. And when I grow up, will I be able to operate on brains that are racist?" And I thought, well, that's a question. That's a question that needs to be addressed. Another little girl asked, "What can we do not to be racist and be safe?" And that's your point, Karen. And that is a big question, with a lot of different ways to respond. You know, kids have a lot of questions about safety. They don't feel safe in their school. School shootings and the sensationalization of that. They don't feel safe in their homes where there's more verbal and physical abuse. They don't feel safe on the streets. They don't feel safe from getting sick. So it's a rhetorical question. How can we as adults bring safety, bring structure, bring comfort into their lives as they and we live through all these occurrences?
And that's such a good point. Right now, in particular, because children are not at school and not able to have their normal daily routine and see their friends and socialize, it seems like they've lost everything that used to be normal in their lives. And I can imagine it's very hard for children right now to feel safe and feel comfortable, and even to deal with just grief over not being able to play with friends.
Exactly. You know, I just read an article that more kids are building forts when they're self-quarantined so that they have a private place that they can go to in their home, because they're also lacking privacy. And one little boy just said, it's my place where I can go. People have to ask if they can come in. And my parents know I'm safe, so I can be there. So I thought that was interesting.
That is interesting. That is a creative way to meet the needs of the moment, which actually sounds like something parents could encourage their kids to do, to create a space for themselves.
To feel safe. And the other thing they can do is reassure the kids. I mean, you probably have to take one topic at a time, like the virus. You know, here they are. They have the myriad of losses that you just named and more. You know, there's a new phrase going around called Zoom gloom, because kids and adults often feel a little down after they hang up from a Zoom conference, and that we're so into that's our way of communication. And it takes such a different kind of an energy that there's a different way that everyone seems to feel. I think for the virus, it's important to say we're working on it. Scientists are working on it. Our family is doing the best that we possibly can to be healthy. We're wearing masks, we're distancing, and we're washing our hands, and that's very important. And then, you know, I go back to Sesame Street because they have downloadable videos, they have downloadable activities that kids can use to understand how to wash their hands, why it's important, how it's helping them stay healthy, how to sneeze in a Kleenex or in their elbow, but not out for everyone, and different health tips that are going to serve them for the rest of their life. And part of the resilience, and sometimes people call this post-traumatic growth, is that kids are learning to be more healthy. Kids watching the racial riots and seeing what racism is, and having compassion maybe for everyone. A byproduct is compassion, empathy, and more kindness for other people. So I do feel like great growth can come from challenges, and I think we shouldn't lose sight of that. I think if we go to racism, if we go to the virus, an important thing is to really, for parents, to monitor the media, because You can't, these young kids that watch it without parent supervision, as I mentioned, may take on a whole different meaning and a whole different response. But if we're watching with the kids, we can ask them what they just heard. We can talk to them simply about racism or the virus, and we can help shape how they see it.
And that's such a good point, because I think the media can be a positive or a negative. And you were mentioning those little videos from Sesame Street. It's really nice to have another source of teaching kids things like washing your hands and wearing a mask so that it isn't constantly the parent telling the child what to do. They're actually hearing it from other adults, like they're used to learning at school. So it seems like you can use television and programming in a very positive way as an adjunct to what parents are trying to teach. But you're so right. They have to be really careful what else their child might consume through television or on the internet.
That we don't know. Until we have the conversations with them. And each one of these big topics can be brought up and spoken of just the way we speak about grief and we speak about sex, and we wouldn't talk to a 5-year-old the same way we talk to a 15-year-old. These conversations are progressive, and I think how wonderful if kids could see that we really are all in it together on this planet. And we're struggling to figure out how we can be healthy for ourselves, how we can be kind and treat everyone else in a healthy, equal way, and how we can help the environment and our planet to be healthy. Mm. And this might be off topic, but I have seen the connection between, I'm working on a book about kids and mental health and climate change. And because I was steeped in climate change and how that's creating anxiety and grief for many of our young people, it's now become broader with the idea of the virus and the idea of racism. And the theme throughout it all is a planet that can't breathe, that the human beings that can't breathe because of the virus, and races that can't breathe because of injustice. And
wow.
If we can somehow distill and simplify the idea that we are all working together, even if it looks like we're not, to find common ground, and that they can be a part of it. That's the other piece. Not only is resilience or a positive outcome one aspect, but another aspect is when you, any of us, take energy and put it into what's worrying us, what we are concerned about, what our challenge is, something happens where it's transformed into a way to feel active, proactive, and resilient. And kids can do this on so many levels in so many ways. I don't know if you want me to talk about it, but I just think it's important for parents to know that it helps kids to be proactive. If someone is saying something nasty to a friend, it's helpful to say, don't do that to my friend, or make sure someone knows about that. If someone's not wearing their mask, it's helpful for someone to say, I can't be with you unless you do that. And all the ways that kids can be an active part of our world, we've seen these young advocates like Greta, and I'm featuring some others in this new resource, who started when they were 12 or there were 8, like this little girl in India who's an advocate for helping poor people in environments that aren't as healthy to live in. Kids are really feeling that they have a voice, and that's something that we need to really support.
Mm, that's such a good point. And I do think this moment that we're in right now is like what I think of as a teachable moment. It's like one of the greatest teachable moments our entire society has had. But for children to be able, if we can help them negotiate this well and help them get through this, and as you said, teach them about compassion and kindness and responsibility and being healthy, how mm-hmm. powerful will that be for them in the future?
It's beautiful. And, you know, thank you for reminding me, because I always mention teachable moments. And, you know, when you watch the news, it's a teachable moment with your child. But the beauty of what you said is that this moment is a teachable moment, because all of these forces are converging to give one message. We're here to help and support each other. And if children can really incorporate that into the deepest parts of themselves, we can only imagine what a wonderful world on earth they can create. And they are our future. And a lot of them don't carry the same things that we've been carrying. And they are very savvy beyond their years. And so I think it's a beautiful moment in that way. And it can be presented to children in that way. Before I forget, there's something else I wanted to mention to parents. And that's having a resource library. I must have 500 children's books on almost every issue you can think of. And many of them are in the book Life and Loss, according to the topic of discussion. But when we were talking about kindness and we were talking about resilience, I was thinking of just children's resources. One is called Mindful Moments, where you can do exercises of well-being with your kids. And it's with very young children. There's another series about being positive and being confident. And even the book has been out for many, many, many years, The Little Engine That Could. It's just celebrating its 90th birthday, but it is such a good story about perseverance. It's one of the attributes of kids' resilience.
That's so funny, because I my parents read that book to me, and it's funny how there are times when I even find that I think I can going through my head when I'm trying to run up a hill and I'm getting tired or something, you know?
Yes.
I mean, it's amazing. Those lessons from early childhood stay with us forever.
And that answered your question about early childhood, because those are the formative years. And, you know, they do stay with us. I was going to say that very early childhood, you know, they say the kids that are traumatized during very early childhood carry more than those that are traumatized later in development, because they're overwhelmed and they haven't yet developed that facility to use their intellect to think about what's happening. So that overwhelm they carry with them and don't understand why they have it. And they keep playing whatever happened to them over and over and over again. That's why it's so important to work with kids as young as we can, so that we can help them release whatever they have gone through. And then as far as racism, there are books for children about racism. There was one book that I talk about in Life and Loss about different shades of kids. And they realize they're not really black, but they have a color of brown, and their other friend is a different color. And it began a conversation on shades of color. There's another little book called I Am Enough, and it's about an African-American girl who realizes that she's just fine, just the way that she is. And even if kids make fun of her, she still has friends that are there to support her. So I was just trying to think of, you know, what can we give kids? And what can parents have handy so that they can create conversations and have words to use? And before I forget, I wanted to say another thing. I feel like it's always helpful to have a book for kids on grief and loss. And if there's a memory book, kids can write memories. They can draw pictures. They can keep journals about their person and how they feel. And when the pandemic came out, I decided to take the children's book that I wrote called Children Also Grieve and put it on my website as a free downloadable resource so that any child could have a book about grief that we could all talk about and have something they could write in. So I didn't want to forget that.
Oh, and that's on your website, grievingchildren.net?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's wonderful. It's
called, and the story behind that was I did some work in Beijing, China, with their only psychiatric hospital. And at the time, I met with Chinese psychiatric nurses. And at the time, they couldn't even imagine including children in their program. There was no resource for children. They were not included when anyone died. And so I did this book first in Chinese, for the Chinese children, and that's where it went first. And then it was, we put it into English.
Oh, that's excellent, because I know I hear from parents who are, they're feeling a little bit overwhelmed already. They're trying to homeschool their children and going through all their lessons. But I think your tips are so helpful. If parents would remember that these social and emotional lessons that their children are also learning as we go through this process are every bit as important as the schoolwork they're doing. And remember, they can use play and reading books and just conversations or finding little videos to watch together to help them, help their children learn other things while we're all going through this.
And I mean, that's really a great, great, great way of putting it. And I'll extend it one step, that children's learning is impacted by their grief and loss issues and what they're holding on to. And if kids are going through emotional feelings and thoughts that they haven't expressed, it may very well hinder their learning while they're home. Because they have to learn in a whole new way. It's more difficult for most kids to learn in this way. And they're feeling so much that allowing them to express their feelings and telling them it's okay and it's safe will actually enhance their learning. And if you don't mind, Karen, I don't know if you feel this is relevant, but it's one of the reasons that I got into children's grief and loss. If you wanted to hear that story.
Oh, yes, yes. Please tell us.
Okay, so I, a teacher and a counselor, for 20 years before I became a grief therapist. And my first year teaching, which was long ago, at that time, what they did in the system that I worked with was they had a lot of kids repeat school. So my first class was 22 second grade repeaters. And because I was a new teacher and they were almost considered throwaway kids, they gave this class to me. They put us in a metal trailer away from the rest of the kids. And that only added to their shame and low self-esteem for having had to repeat second grade. So the first day I came into class, these kids looked very down, very depressed, weren't very talkative. And I had to make up my mind, what could I do to help these kids feel better emotionally and therefore learn a little better? And so as we worked together, I decided to go back to the first grade curriculum, start from the beginning, and make sure they knew everything and it was progressive. Secondly, I wanted to make sure that they met success, that they felt good about themselves. And lastly, what we did every afternoon was have talk time where the kids could talk about their life, their home, what was going on. And what unfolded is that all of these kids, every single one of them, had unresolved grief and loss issues that were happening in their home. And by just having a support group, because that little class became a community that had each other's back, it evolved into a place where they felt safe, they felt success. And when the principal came in 6 months later and saw them raising their hand and learning, he said, "How in the world did that happen?" And that question helped me to realize the seed point that children's learning is greatly impacted by their grief process. It was a long story.
Oh, wow. That's just so powerful. And, you know, it's still, that is a fact that's just not recognized, I don't think, in our educational system.
And you know, I work with, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's also not recognized in medicine either. We don't see the, recognize the impact of unresolved grief on physical health, but please go ahead and tell me what you were going to say.
No, that's a really good point, because kids get stomach aches and kids get headaches. And I always suggest they get physicals. It's the point of seeing the whole child. And, you know, I work with TAPS, the Tragedy Assistance Program of the military. And so often these kids have been survivors of a traumatic death in the military. And I might get a call from somewhere in the United States, which I did, which is the story I'm going to say, about a little boy whose dad died. And of course, the father dies, the family has to move. They had to move back with her parents in a different state, in a different school. And it was a year later, and the little boy was acting out, and there was no connecting the dots between the father's traumatic death and the behavior of this little boy. Fortunately, I was able to be a liaison and talk with the team and explain and talk about traumatic grief for kids and how it might come out in acting out, but this child was actually going through his grief process. And so that unawareness about that is a hindrance to kids. And I try to have parents and teachers be advocates about that. You know, you brought up the topic of resilience, and I had this at-risk 8-year-old who I got a call that he was on the roof of his school. And he said he wanted to jump off. He didn't want to live. He wanted to kill himself. We worked together for quite some time. He had layers and layers of unresolved grief with his dad who was murdered, his mother who was sick, and it just went on and on. But I grew to love him, and I grew to find the place where we could connect. He loved to clean the boards. He loved to do a lot of things, and we really eventually really bonded. But when I went in for the team conference at school, and his teacher was there, and the teacher went on about what he did wrong, how he was a problem, and then I said, well, what is it that you like about him? What are some of his good attributes? She said, I can't find any. Mm. And so when a child is in that environment 8 hours a day, it makes it very hard. And when we speak of resilience, and how to help kids through this, even if they may act out, we have to remember to support what attributes they have of resilience to help them move forward.
Mm. Wow, these stories are just so touching, but it's causing me, like as a medical doctor, well, I worked in hospice. I also did a lot of worked with a lot of mental health patients, but how many times over and over again I saw these issues of unresolved grief for adults, and it was grief from all the way back in childhood. They had carried with them their entire lives and never really had right. The opportunity to address or heal. And it breaks my heart to think about it, that if only we could do a better job with children, I think we could all grow up into healthier adults if we had what we needed as children around grief issues.
I so agree. And you know that when repressed grief lives inside of someone, it affects them emotionally, mentally, and physically. And you know it can come out in anxiety disorders, fatigue, depression, and it does if it's unresolved. I hope that it's more out in the open, although I still strive to have just what you're saying, Karen, the people in the medical profession, in every profession, including educators, to take a look at the whole child. And I don't mean that in a trite way. I mean that every child is different. Every child grieves in a different way. somebody will say, this child isn't doing well because all they do is cry. Well, at this point in their life, they're very sad. So let's normalize it. Let's talk to them about it. Let's let them know it's okay. Kids might be very angry. I've had kids. One teenager came in. She was extremely angry at the doctor who made the mistake during an operation and her father died. So even though she was a teenager, she used some of the things that I had in my office to duplicate the scene of the operation. And she took the clay figure of the doctor and smashed it and said, I wish you were dead too. Now, did she want to kill that doctor? No. Was she in a safe environment? Yes. She just acted it out in a safe way. And sometimes kids need that.
That's such a good point, that idea of just creating that safe space so that kids can express their emotions however they might come out.
Yes. Sometimes I say, write a letter to the person. You don't have to mail it. Oh, here's would you like to hear another story? Because I have all the kids in my brain. But
sure.
This woman, and she was just really, really angry. And she was walking around, and her mother had died, and her father began to date. And her father was dating a woman with the same name as the mother. And she said, I don't want him to do this, and I'm so angry at him. And I said, listen, if you could write down anything, what would you write down? And she wrote down, I don't want you to see this person. I'm afraid I'll lose you too. Now, that's a real fear of kids. Mm-hmm. If you're a parent, that they'll lose another person, and sometimes they do when they remarry. So that was a very good point. Another little girl came in very angry, and it was a safe way that she could do that. After she expressed it, I always ask kids, would you like to talk about this with your dad? They go, oh, well, maybe, but will you talk for me? And then when I invite dad in, they really begin to say how they feel, which she did. And at least she got to voice, and he was more aware of it. And that's a step in the right direction. One little girl came in, and she was very upset too. And I said, listen, no, she was very sort of overwhelmed. And you can do this with your child as a parent. And you can just say, what's your top five worries? And they just write them down. And the top worry for this child was that her father didn't wear a seatbelt and mom was killed in an automobile accident. And so I said, would you like to write down a letter? She said, sure. So it became a project. She decorated it with a picture that says, wear your belt. She gave him questions. Will you wear your belt? Yes, no, maybe. And she circled it maybe ahead of time. And then she said, you know, I worry about you. I don't want you to die too. Please wear your belt. Will you answer me? And she put a little pocket in the back where dad could respond. And the parents are usually waiting outside while I see the child. And so I said, do you want to give this to your dad? She said, yes. And dad responded in a note, and it said, I love you. I don't want you to worry. I will wear my seatbelt. I bring that up because there's certain things where you can have children relay worries that they might not be able to have in an everyday conversation.
And that's such a good point. I think too that we have to recognize that we as adults may not have any clue what it is children are worried about. We might think we could figure it out or guess, but without giving them the opportunity to express that, they may have things in their head that we would never even imagine that they're thinking or ways of looking at these issues.
That's right. That's right. And so I think that we really do have to be aware that we might not know. It again goes back to magical thinking sometimes. The other thing with grieving children, and grief can be, as we said, for this entire conversation over a lot of different things, that children have linking objects, and the linking objects objects are very near and dear to their heart. And I just thought of this example because it's something that parents can do. One little girl felt that every time she saw a butterfly, the butterfly was a messenger from her mom. And so her dad got her a butterfly necklace so that she could feel that her mom was always with her. And it's something like that that's so helpful. One little girl was so angry because mom died and dad had to sell her office that she worked at. She was distraught. And then I said, well, what do you wish your dad could do to help you with this? She thought of all these ideas of taking mom's desk. And then she said, and with the sale, maybe he would give me $25 to buy a stuffed animal that reminded me of mom. So she went from the impossible situation that she couldn't accept to her own ideas of how she could work it through. I think that's important to remember. And that the stuffed animal and the desk were linking objects to mom that she could take with her. There's a little children's resource called The Invisible String. And it's really good because it tells children that you're tied to the person that you love through your heart. There's an invisible string. And to remember that. And
is that a book, a children's book?
Yeah, that's a book for kids. It's called The Invisible String. Yeah.
Okay. I'm writing some of these down so I can make a list of these.
There's so many, really. There's a great book if you're talking to your kids about climate change. Since I'm working on climate change, I've really tried to find the best resources. But I think that the way this book is put out, it gives an idea of how we can work with kids. And it's called Thank You Earth, A Love Letter to Our Planet. And the whole idea is to think about why you're grateful. Why you're grateful to the earth. What does it give you? And it really helps children to feel positive and successful when they can say thank you for what they have. And they can do that with the person that died, that has died, writing a letter telling them all the things they're grateful for that that person gave them. They can do that if a pet dies, and they can write the same symbolic letter to their pet. So there's many ways that they can use it, but I thought it was a great idea.
I was just going to say that's one of the things I've been using for myself going through the lockdown from coronavirus is just keeping a journal and every day writing down things I'm grateful for so that instead of focusing on, oh, I can't do this, I can't do that, I'm actually focusing on the wonderful things that are here right now in my life that I can do. So that's a good reminder that we can do the same thing for kids.
Definitely. And that's another part of the teachable moment. And I like how you put it so much, Karen, because it is this moment that's the teachable moment. And we can say to kids, in this moment in time, what are you grateful for? And it will help them feel better, as it probably helps you when you journal every day, to realize all the good around you.
Yeah. And it sounds like that could be one of the aspects of raising a resilient child too, is helping them recognize and get into a state of gratitude and being thankful for things.
I actually do list that as one of the attributes of a grieving child of a resilient child is that gratefulness, because what it does is give you confidence and a positive outlook about yourself, your environment, and the future. When I told you the story about the teacher that couldn't find anything good about this child, I think it's so important that we take a look at our children and see what are their attributes of resilience that we can support Are they proactive? Do they like to do things? Do they like to make things? Do they communicate? Do they have empathy? Do they have perseverance, like the little engine that could? And do they have the ability to be grateful for their lives and what they have and how they perceive life in the future? Are they optimistic? And it's all of these things that we can nurture and support. They see so much negativity. They hear so much negativity. I do think it's up to us as adults and parents and caring professionals to help reframe the narrative. And I know that's a term that's used a lot, but really into a way that, just as you said, Karen, all of us can appreciate the present moment.
Yeah, and it's such an interesting time that we as adults, everyone around the planet is actually, we're all going through the same experience at the same time. And I cannot think of another time in my lifetime when something like this has happened. And so I love this idea. I think if we as adults are helping children, we're actually helping ourselves in a way too, because whatever books we're reading with children or whatever we're helping them learn, we're actually fostering that in ourselves as well.
Yeah. Well, that's such a good point. I had a little boy and we did a genogram on families, and you have to say who you liked, who you didn't like, who you could go to, and they would put an X or a heart, and he put an X by his grandfather. And I said, oh, I didn't know that you couldn't speak to your grandfather about this. He said, well, my grandfather has Alzheimer's. And I said, oh, and I happen to have a resource on Alzheimer's called Always Grandma, and we read it together, and he really liked it. And he said, can I share it with my mom? I said, sure. So he brought it home that night. I get a call from mom. She said, I love that resource so much. Can I share it with my sister? And I often find that adults like children's resources because they go right to the heart of it.
Isn't it true, really, that a lot of us are probably walking around with unhealed grief or confusion or sadness from our own childhoods that we didn't get a chance to heal? And by reading children's stories, we're actually even talking to that part of ourselves, that early wound that we're carrying, and finding ways to just to help ourselves become resilient and to have some of that post-traumatic growth that you described.
Yes, and we're actually helping to heal ourselves, our inner child that didn't have that opportunity as a child. But we can still do that, and I think our children do help us with that. It's so interesting because, you know, children, the connection we have with our children is pretty amazing. And even though it's parent and child, it's also an unspoken partnership about sharing life together. And so I think we do help heal each other, just as you're saying. And it's fortunate to have these resources where we can provide words to use to share. My parents didn't have that. And they came from a whole different world than the one that I'm living in and trying to give to children of today. And so I'm very appreciative for everything that we do have that can help children and ourselves.
And Linda, you mentioned your book, Life and Loss, A Guide to Help Grieving Children. Would you tell us a little bit more about what's in that book? Is that a book that right now would be helpful to parents?
I think it would be very helpful. I think it talks about the basic. This is the third edition because I have found that since I did the first edition, it keeps growing as my understanding enlarges about what are these grief and loss issues. I mean, it deals with death. It deals with divorce. It deals with immigration issues. It deals with racial issues, LGBTQ issues, what are the techniques that we can use to work with our kids, like memory work and just the simple things that I have mentioned today, but more. And I always tend to use children's drawings and writings so that you can actually see children's words and see what they're thinking and feeling and really how to do it. As I mentioned, I include a huge bibliography because I really feel resources are important on every subject, annotated so that you know what age group goes with that. So I do think it would be helpful. And I don't want to forget the topic of pet loss, because I did a little book for children called Lucy Let's Go, and it's about a puppy whose older sister, Tashi, dies, and how she feels, and really the children can project through Lucy how they would feel if their pet dies, or actually even if a sibling dies. So that's another resource I think would be helpful. And there's one more resource. I'll only mention one other one, which is Great Answers to Difficult Questions About Death. And we did this book so that questions that kids ask, there would be some kind of a model of an answer that parents could use so they would feel that they had the words to answer the most common questions that kids ask.
Oh, that's a fantastic resource, because I was thinking that probably is an obstacle for a lot of parents around having these conversations, because they just they're not sure how to start or what to say to their child.
Right. And that's why I did that book, because I felt like it would be helpful just to have words to use. And that's why I'm an advocate of the resource library, because it has words to use for each specific issue that comes up. I've done other
stories are so powerful. So reading a story through a book is sometimes it's just a much more powerful object lesson or teaching lesson than us trying to explain something from our heads to make it understandable for a child.
And, you know, with both of the children also read the book that's on my website that's free and downloadable. They get to project onto the dogs in the story. And they can say, oh, I felt like that too. And then we can stop and talk to them about it. It's really a tool to create conversation with the common things that children do feel and think and say. And there's a part for parents in there as well, and caring adults. There's so much more I could say, because there's so much to children and grief and loss. But I do feel that at the end of the day, we have to realize we're powerless to control the losses that kids go through. But if we honor their inner feelings, if we provide mentorship and safe havens for expression, we really can empower them to be more caring, more confident human beings. And so I think that's our job.
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. And so that's just such a good reminder that we need to look at the experience we're having right now and figure mm-hmm. out how we can use it in such a positive way. And I believe that this generation, the children who are going through this right now, that we're raising through this, I feel like they're going to be some powerful people. They will have already developed some depth, character, and resilience after going through this experience. And they may be changing the whole world.
I think so. I think they are the model of post-traumatic growth, because they've seen and gone through so much as young children that there has to be a larger well of empathy and compassion, and a voice that wants to have action about changing the world into a better place. I'm with you on this, 100%. And anything that we can do to facilitate that is a gift that we can give to our children and to the planet, because we are preparing for a future that we won't even know but we want them to have the very best future. And that comes from the inside out, doesn't it?
That is so true. So true. We all have this opportunity for post-traumatic growth, and we really can do that together. We can help one another, which is why, I mean, I'm so grateful that you were willing to come and have this conversation. Part of that offering to each other, like, let's share what we know and figure out how we can help one another get through this.
That's it. We're all in it together. That seems to be the phrase of the day. And it couldn't be truer. So I appreciate that you have this forum for discussion and that we can share what little we know about a certain topic if it's helpful. And so I thank you, Karen, for inviting me.
Well, you're so welcome. And I'll remind listeners that I'm talking with Linda Goldman, and her website is grievingchildren.net. And there is a free download. You can get there a book called Children Also Grieve, a child's book. That sounds fantastic. So what a great place to start for parents who want to just start reading to their kids and start working through these issues.
Yeah.
Well, Linda, thanks again for joining me, and best wishes to you as we go onward with our journey through these interesting times.
Yes, and the same to you. Thank you so much, Karen, and just stay healthy and safe, and we'll move forward together, right?
Yes, definitely.
Yes.
All right.
I hope you enjoyed my interview with Linda Goldman and have found it helpful to you. I loved her tips for how she works with children with grief, and I think those are things we could use with children in our own lives, but even use for ourselves. Things like encouraging expressive play and having children share their emotions through play, also drawing pictures, reading books together, writing a letter to the person who has died or someone they're missing, writing down their top five worries. Various media. She talked about some Sesame Street videos that children can watch, and also her use of support groups for children and just bringing children together with others who are going through similar experiences. So I think all of those things are actually things we can also do ourselves. We can draw pictures, we can write in journals, we can write letters, and we can join support groups and share our feelings with other people. So remember that as we're going through these difficult times, it takes some creativity to become more resilient and to find our own way through these dark days. And I also really liked her discussion of what grieving children need from adults. And one is to honor their feelings, to create safe havens, and also mentorship. So I think these are the things that any of us who are grieving actually need from one another. We need to have our feelings validated. We need to feel safe, and we need to feel that it's okay to experience whatever emotions we have, and we can do so without judgment, without expectations from other people, but to simply be safe with our grief and whatever emotions accompany that grief in the moment. And then the idea of mentorship, which I think is also really powerful. I think that we can demonstrate for one another how we ourselves are experiencing grief and going through it. I think we can learn a lot from one another by observing each other, by talking together, by sharing our own experiences. So I think that idea of mentorship is something really important to consider. And I really believe that those of us who work in the end-of-life arena, who are around death and dying and grief on a day-to-day basis in our work, that we carry some responsibility to be mentors for others who are going through this experience, perhaps for the first time in their lives. We carry some responsibility to be mentors for them. Mentors through the way we ourselves carry grief and trauma. And as I said, this is a time of collective traumatization, collective loss, collective grief. And so I think it's a time when we need to step up, when we're able to carry our own pain and talk about it constructively. I think the world needs us to be mentors. So I encourage you to give that some thought and think about how you can be a mentor in your family or group of friends, your community, or even on a much larger basis for the world. And so a few announcements. I have been doing a series of stories on a weekly basis, and I just recorded the 15th story last week that was released on Friday. That series has been called Love Over Fear, Stories for Precarious Times, and I've been doing that as a labor of love, just to put something else out there for people to listen to as we've gone through lockdown together. I've decided to take a little break from the stories for the rest of the summer, just to give myself a little bit more space and free time, and also to get inspired and nourished myself. So if you're interested, you can go back and listen to those stories, and there will be a tab on the show notes for this podcast, which are at eolupodcast.com. Go to that website and you'll find a tab for Love Over Fear, and I'll have links to all the stories there so you don't have to scroll down through all the episodes to find them. I'll have links to all 15 of the stories so you can easily listen to them if you're interested in going back. Maybe there's some you missed, maybe you haven't heard any of them, but you might enjoy listening to those as just a little something extra for you. And in the fall, I'll likely be back with more stories. I still have a lot more stories to tell. I just want to give myself a little break in terms of my work output and my schedule for the rest of the summer. Also, I have been doing monthly vigils on the 9th of each month, and I will continue doing the vigils. So you can keep looking for those recordings. I've done them for April, May, and June. And so July 9th will be the next vigil recording that I upload. And those are usually fairly short, just 15 minutes or so. You can listen to it. There's some time for reflection and deep breathing, a little poetry, and some call and response readings. And so if you're interested, you can listen to the vigils as well. And those, as I said, come out the 9th of each month. So remember, there'll be a new episode of the podcast every Monday. So I hope you'll tune in and join me again. And if you enjoy this content, please think about sharing it with someone else who might benefit from it. And also, it's really helpful if you subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you happen to be listening to podcasts. But if you subscribe to the podcast on your podcast app and then leave a review, that helps greatly for my podcast to go up in the rankings and be shown to more people who are looking for this kind of content. So if you're willing to do that, it would be very helpful. So until next week, remember, we're here for love. That's what this is all about. We're here to learn how to love. So face your fear. Be ready for whatever happens next, and love each and every moment of your life. Bye-bye.